Good evening. My name is Sean, and I am the leader of youth ministry here, and I have the joy of speaking to you tonight. So can you turn to someone near to you and say hello, and maybe ask them what they did this weekend, and maybe ask them what they're most looking forward to about Monday. Well, I hope that got you enthused about Monday. Anyone looking forward to Monday? Oh, hello. Well, welcome to The Six, where if you've not come every week for the last kind of 6 weeks, what you might know or not know, tonight is the third time in 6 Sundays where I'm tackling a section of the Bible that involves killing children. Thank you, Nico. It started with the killing of the innocents in Herod's time, after baby Jesus was born, to try and stop Jesus. It continued with Pharaoh ordering all the Hebrew boys to be killed in the story of the birth of Moses. And tonight I get to deal with the introduction, the bit just before Passover, which is the kind of the final plague that God promises to Egypt. So this is the section of the Bible where we have, in this story of Moses, we have Pharaoh being more than just a little bit flaky and inconsistent. If you don't know the story, and if you want to sleep through the entire sermon series, you can either watch the legendary Prince of Egypt movie. Has anyone seen that? For many years, it's been used as a substitute teacher for religious studies and on Sunday schools. And Prince of Egypt is soon coming to the West End as well, if you want to go see that. Let me give you the basic rundown so far. We have the king of Egypt, Pharaoh, oppressing the Israelites, but they keep growing in number. So Pharaoh orders all the boys, or the Hebrew boys, to be killed at birth. Moses was born, hidden, floated down a river, spotted by Pharaoh's daughter, who later took Moses in as her son. Moses didn't like seeing his people being oppressed and beaten. So he took some action, killed a guard, ran away, met God in the form of a burning bush, which is what we talked about last week, and went back to Egypt. He then went to see the king with Aaron and said, "Let my people go." They tried to show that God was on their side. A wooden staff became a snake, but Pharaoh would not listen. They went to Pharaoh and said, "Let my people go." And Pharaoh said, "No." We have the plague then of the water in the Nile and in the rivers and streams and all the puddles turning to blood. They go to Pharaoh again, "Let my people go." "No," he says. So frogs appear in people's beds and in people's ovens. And Pharaoh turns around and goes, "Tell you what, if you can solve this, then you can go." Actually, no, I've changed my mind, no. So here's another plague, tiny, bitey, little, natty, midgy mosquito things. "Let my people go." "No," says Pharaoh. Then you get flies. Then Pharaoh turns around and says, "Okay, can't you stay here and worship God here?" Persists a bit more. "Okay, fine, off you go then." "Oh no, wait, I've changed my mind again. Actually, no. Let my people go," Pharaoh says. "No, all of the livestock of the Egyptians die. People are covered in boils. Animals are covered in boils. There's hail, there's locusts." Pharaoh says to Moses after all this, "Forgive me. And, you know, get rid of this, and I'll let you go." Or maybe not. Pharaoh again says no. Every time, the Lord is hardening his heart. And that's where we get to tonight. Tonight's title of Dealing with Darkness, because this is the next plague in this very long list, which we've kind of just passed over for a second. And we're going to look at darkness. And this whole section of the Bible reminds me, well, I could only get one thing in my head when I thought of it, and it reminds me of this. Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen, which, I wonder how many people actually know the words, because then they're kind of just for me, I've just turned 30, and I've sung this song at the top of my voice at parties for years, and never actually known the lyrics. They kind of come out as a series of sounds, and you get the, "No, no, we will not let you go." I looked it up. There's a word at the beginning of all those phrases which is called Bishmillah. You know that? Bishmillah, no, we will not let you go, let it go. And as I looked it up, Bishmillah means, it's an Arabic word for "in the name of God." In the name of God, we will not let you go. Let me go, 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 go. So that's what that means. And that's all I could get in my head when I was looking at this. So with that in mind, let's read the little bit of the passage that I want to focus on tonight. We are in Exodus chapter 10. And I want to focus specifically on verses 21 to 23. So this is the plague of darkness. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand towards the sky, so that darkness spreads over Egypt, darkness that can be felt." So Moses stretched out his hand toward the sky, and total darkness covered all Egypt for 3 days. No one could see anyone else or move about for 3 days. Yet all the Israelites had light in the places where they live. Darkness is a funny thing, because here in winter, we get a lot of it. As you know, Mirku joined our staff in September. Mirku's from Finland, where they have even more darkness in winter. That's fine. But, you know, you imagine these places where they go for weeks or months without even seeing the sun. And then you can start to get a glimpse of what it might be like. What we're referring to here is kind of that complete and total darkness. Now, I wonder what that could feel like. You can kind of get an idea of what it's like if you were to ever go caving, but into one of those caves where you don't have the lights on and everything's really well lit. Those caves where you've ever been, where you can't see your hand in front of your face. If you think this is dark, that's nothing. The Bible describes the darkness that passed over the land as a darkness that you could feel. A darkness that you can feel is something so different and so, quite frankly, terrifying that it would have sent people into absolute chaos. When you're first plunged into darkness, it can be confusing, disorientating, hard to focus, hard to know a direction. And so much of that is true for our lives. There is so much darkness in our world, and we'd be silly to ignore it. We have everything. We have illnesses, we have poverty, we have injustice in every form, in every corner of the world, in different levels, yes, but darkness exists everywhere. And the thing is that darkness can distract us from our role as Christians, as people who choose to follow God, as people who choose to believe. What you'll notice is that after a period of darkness, actually, you start to adjust. They say, don't you, for anyone who's ever been on a scout camp or ever been on a night hike, you get the constant call of, turn off your torches, you'll see better. And it's true, because as soon as you're out in the darkness for a period of time, your eyes start to adjust. And you can start to see things a little bit better, the obstacles around you. And that's because you're getting used to the darkness. I wonder if that's the same for us as well. Do we live permanently in a world that is actually pretty dark? But you know what? We've adjusted to it. We've gotten used to it. Actually, we can see fine. We can find our way. But actually, there's darkness all around us. But it doesn't matter, because we can get through it. But there's one detail in this story that is different. So whilst there was a darkness that could be felt, a terrifying darkness that covered everyone, it does say that there was a tiny, tiny little bit of light over God's people, so that God's people could see what was going on. Somewhere, perhaps in the distance, something small. When we shed light on things, things change. We can see better. So we take some of the darkness that might be in our world. I wonder if you can think about that for a moment. And actually think personally about kind of the darkness that covers some of us. The big ones that we always hear about in the news are actually these big, serious issues around mental health, around anxiety, around the increasing number of people who have to rely on our local food banks just to put food on the table. I would say that's darkness, sitting in the same category as outright evil, the things that have put into place the systems or the personalities that mean that people go hungry. And it's okay to not want to be in darkness. It's okay to want light. Take Jesus. Jesus praying in the Garden of Gethsemane. He says in the story, he went on and bowed with his face to the ground, praying, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup of suffering be taken away from me." Jesus bowed down before God and said, "I don't want this darkness, take it from me." But I bet we don't do the same. Like my first call when I'm suffering or when I'm going through something that I'm really not a fan of, I'll be honest, I don't normally turn to God first. I normally panic. I normally deal with my human emotions. I normally overprocess and overcomplicate things. But Jesus' first response was to get down on his knees. And he's the Son of God. But his first response was to bow down and pray to God. Thinking about Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, and a lady called Rachel Noom, who runs a self-harm addiction charity called Think Twice, she says this: "When I was at my most unwell, having panic attacks on buses and unable to trust in any kind of future, I felt an overpowering sense of darkness. I could not lift my head in worship, and I believed myself to be bad for God's kingdom. After all, it's hard to share the good news when all you could do is cry. I didn't feel able to participate in communion, and I could barely pray. I was utterly convinced that the gospel truth was for everyone except me. Reading about Jesus in the garden did not bring a heightened awareness of God's presence, but taught me to be honest with God. I read about Jesus praying to his Father until the words blurred before me. If the Son of God could be honest with his Father about the depths of his pain and darkness, then what was stopping me being honest? Honest about my anxiety. Honest about my feelings of abandonment. And they also allow me to be honest with those around me. If I could lay my darkness before God, then I could lay my darkness before those who loved me. And that honesty broke through some of the shame as I heard my story in a different way for the first time. I was unwell and in darkness, but that didn't make me a bad Christian or a bad person." So there is a solution to darkness. And if we can have some light now, that'd be good. We have Jesus. Jesus who was born for us to meet us in the middle of darkness. Jesus knows that you and you and you and me, that we all mess up today, yesterday, and tomorrow. He knows that we sin. And he knows that we all need light in our darkness. And Jesus is that light. As it says at the very beginning of John, which is a verse kind of we talk about at Christmas, as we talk about Jesus the light coming into the world. This is how one version puts it. It says, "The life light blazed out of the darkness, and the darkness couldn't put it out." So we're acknowledging two things there. Darkness exists. Let's be honest about that and let's acknowledge it. The darkness that covered the land of Egypt existed and was felt so tangibly, so fearfully. The light shone out of that darkness. It was bright enough to be seen, bright enough to make a difference, which is what Jesus is for us. He is so strong to overcome that darkness that it cannot be defeated. It cannot be put out. It cannot be covered over. It says, though, in this passage that the darkness is still there. The darkness couldn't put it out. It doesn't say the darkness is put out, but it says the darkness couldn't put out the light. So we live in this tension that as we live in an imperfect and broken world, that we have darkness and we have light. We can be tempted sometimes to spend a lot of time in that darkness. But Jesus says, actually, I want you here. I want you to walk in my light. I want you to be the people like the Hebrew people. I want my light to be in your life, shining over the things you do, getting rid of that darkness, getting rid of that fear, getting rid of that anxiety. He is the light blazing out of the darkness and something that can't be put out. So I'd like us to do a couple of things. Is that the band are going to come up, and while the band are playing their first couple of songs, there's two things I would like you to do, or maybe three. But at the back, in the alcove of what I understand used to be the baptistry, at the back is a piece of black paper and some, what I can only describe as invisible ink pens. What I'd love to encourage you to do is to go over to that piece of paper and write in the pen that can't be seen, maybe an area of darkness in your own life, or maybe that of someone, you know, close to you who you know is going through a particular period of darkness. The reason I want you to do that is because that's actually a way of admitting it and praying it, a way of getting it out in a way that no one else can inspect and no one else can observe, but a way of you praying it and getting it out and saying, actually, Jesus, this is the darkness, and I'm going to acknowledge that. I'm going to pray against it. If you're wanting to kind of just stay in your seat, then I'd love you to think about this question. Ponder and think about, how does Jesus overcome our darkness? Because it's all very good, this one snapshot of one Bible verse, Jesus being the light blazing out the darkness and the darkness not being able to put it out. But maybe think about and answer that question. How does Jesus overcome your darkness? And then the other thing I'd love you to do is to come up and take one of our fire-safe candles. Come on, pick one up. You can wander around with it for a while if you want to. Turn it on, pray over it. And then what I'd love you to do when you're finished with it is just come and place it back down somewhere along the communion rail or on the seat in front of you, something like that. Yeah, so take one, pray with it, use it as just a visual reminder that Jesus is the light. Yeah, so let's do that. If you could, if you want to stand, you can, but otherwise I'd love you to kind of just get moving and move around a bit. Also, there's kind of loads of empty chairs over there. If you just want a space to sit and be by yourself, then actually that's great. Also, our prayer team are also in that corner as well. So that's a total of five things you could be doing, five ways to respond. And it'd be great if you could pick one of those things, whether it's staying where you are, whether it's moving. And let's do that. And I just leave you with this message. The people living in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of the shadow of death, a light has dawned.